You know who you sound like?
Who?
Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, you're like the 17th person that's told me that.
I love him.
Yeah.
Actors.
Yeah, he's very entertaining, very talented.
Yes.
I take it as a compliment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Welcome to Friends Beer, Coffee, and Autobiographical Podcast for the Hell of It. I'm your host, Joel Gretzik, and my guest today is a very dear friend, Addie. How are things going with you? It's been a long time since we've had a chance to sit down and really talk face to face like this.
It's been a whirlwind. It's really been a good experience. I'm in for the most part, a really good headspace, heart space, you know, in life. I'm very grateful. A lot of wonderful things going on in my life at the moment. So yeah, I would say overall it's pretty good, even though there are ups and downs. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I'm happy and I'm content and in a really good space.
So when we first met, it was, we were talking just a few minutes ago about it. It's been at least 10 years, probably longer than that.
I think so. I think it was 2010.
Yeah, there you go. So 13 years. I know it was definitely before kids, for me anyways. And a lot, I think, has happened since then. We're both, I would think, probably very different people than we were that long ago. But, and I've told you this before, you're one of my favorite people on Facebook to keep in touch with and keep track of, because I feel like you're doing a lot of interesting things, even when it's just kind of your day-to-day life. And maybe that's part of, you know, my Midwestern seeing the whole California thing. But I definitely enjoy, you know, keeping up with what you're up to.
Well, thank you. And I'm from the Midwest too, Cincinnati. So
that's right. I did forget about that.
Yeah. So you're probably identifying with some of that too.
So when, you know, just out of curiosity here, you are from Cincinnati. How did you end up in California?
So I've kind of lived all over, but I ended up in this time in California, in Sacramento, in 2009 because of my ex-wife. We met. She lived with me for a couple years in Richmond, Virginia, and then we decided we wanted to move back to California. So we chose Sacramento because it was affordable of all the, you know, cities here.
Sure.
And then we began the divorce process in fall of 2012, and I decided to stay here. I fell in love with Sacramento. I was involved in the community. There's a great, I'm a poet, so there's a great poetry community here, and a great arts community, and a great queer community. So it was just a no-brainer to kind of stay here, and it was affordable at the time.
Sure.
So yeah, but it's home now. Other than living in Cincinnati, which I left when I was 22, it's the longest I've lived in one place. And so that really speaks to the place, you know what I mean? For me to want to stay and make roots and, you know, and just grow a life. So
that's great. Tell me about your life right now. Tell me about your poetry and your pets and all those things.
Well, I write poetry. We had the longest running open mic in Sacramento, like 25 years, and the place has closed. The guy sold it. He got an offer he couldn't refuse. There's this guy coming in, and he's going to build a dueling piano bar, but says he's open to having us. But we've all seen the mock-up of the place. There's really no place. There's no way to have an open mic there. So I don't know what we're going to do. We're kind of in limbo right now. But yeah, I go through phases where, like, I write a lot of poetry, and then I go through phases where I'm like really dry. And I think it's probably part of the creative process for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, there's some people who are disciplined and they get up every morning and they have a writing schedule, or they paint every day. I'm not like that. I go through fits and, you know, stops and that's how I've always been. So, I do paint some, more for my mental health than really trying to sell anything. I mean, I would love to sell stuff if people wanted to buy it, but I've not tried to market it. And then I'm working and I'm getting married in May.
Congratulations.
Yes. We've been together a year and a half, and we had a cautionary tale with her parents, who now live full time in Mexico. They were living 6 months out of the year there, but they just sold their home that her father built 45 years ago.
Wow.
And it's a two story, you know, and they had like 50 years of stuff to go through, and he was having trouble climbing the stairs. So the cautionary tale was, we need to downsize and get rid of things. So we don't have to be doing that in our 70s. And we need to move eventually to a one story house and a smaller house. So we were going to buy a house and rent it out and then renovate it when we were ready to move in 10 years.
Sure,
but we just found a home that has been completely renovated, so we don't want to rent it out. So we close soon, and then the seller's going to live there till mid-November, renting back. And then I don't know when we're going to move in, with having a wedding in May, but we bought some furniture today for our new house.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I have had this house for 3 years, and it's got all my mark on it, and we need a place where we can put both our marks on it, you know what I mean, and share. Sure. And I'm just really grateful for the partner I have. She's just amazing. She so understands me and gets me, and we laugh a lot, and we just have fun. So
how did the two of you meet? You guys are just absolutely adorable. Every time I see photos of, you know, going out and doing whatever you're doing, look like you're having fun.
We are a Tinder success story. She found me on Tinder, and nice. It was so wild because I was going through this process of seeing if I was on the autism spectrum. And I went through this process and with this therapist who specializes in diagnosing people on the autism spectrum and ADHD. And she had me go back through my whole life, and that whole journey of looking over my whole life with this new lens made my whole life make so much sense.
Okay.
It was amazing. So I literally got the diagnosis on March 17th, and she and I connected on Tinder on March 17th.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was really amazing. And when we started dating, we were reading a book about a neurodivergent and a neurotypical person dating, and the ins and outs of managing the relationship and communication. And we were already doing a lot of those things already. And it's been an amazing journey. So I feel so incredibly grateful. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you two really enjoy doing? I know I see you out at different restaurants and, you know, going to see art and things like
that. We love going to hear live music, especially jazz. I proposed to her at a club in New Orleans. I arranged it all.
Fun.
We just became this year Sacramento Kings basketball season ticket holders. We're in the nosebleed section, but we love sports. Nice. We love to travel, especially international travel and like road trips, and we all from the gamut, weekend trips away.
Sure.
We love hiking. We love animals, our dogs and cats. And we love walking. So like today, we just got back. We walked a couple of miles into our Midtown area. And we had a late lunch. And then we took Lyft back because I had to get back for this. But
sure. Thank you.
We love to walk. And we love looking at art. And and quiet weekends at home with not spending time with anybody else. So we do that often. This was a Hez and Addy weekend, and not doing anything with anybody. And you're like my only thing I'm doing, and she's at the store now. So, but yeah, it's, and we love to laugh. We have really good deep conversations, and we balance each other really well, and like doing household chores, you know, sometimes one does a little more than the other, but then the other picks up, you know, and it's,
sure,
it just works, you know, we just work like a well-oiled machine. So it's refreshing. I've never been in a relationship like this.
I'm really happy for you. It's
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
I'm really happy for you. It means a lot when you find somebody that you click with and that you're just, you know, equally partnered well with.
Yeah. She gets my quirky personality. And when I start to have like a meltdown, because she doesn't react to it, she's a really chill person. And she's more, I'm an ambivert, she's more introverted. But she just stays chill. And I'm able then in the midst of my meltdown, I calm down quicker because she's chill. She's not antagonizing me, like being mad at me like my ex was. So yeah, she's not critical. And she comforts, and she's just so cool, and she's hilarious. She was telling me the story yesterday at work. She's a chiropractor, and she works in Nevada City, which is an hour away from us, where she's okay. From. She commutes. So she went out of her office to, was carrying trash to the dumpster, and she took her car key remote and was trying to unlock the dumpster.
Oh, no.
And she said, I did that, and I just laughed at myself after I realized what I was doing.
It was one of those days. Wow. My father-in-law used to be a chiropractor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, years and years ago. He did that for forever. So I think that's something that's well needed for a lot of people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's go back in time a little bit.
Okay.
To when we first met.
Yeah.
I don't remember the first time like we talked, but I do remember we were in Tennessee, basically at like, it was a religious conference or get together of some sort.
Yeah, the Outlaw Preachers.
Where were you in your faith journey then versus now?
Back then I had left conservative Christianity. I had, you know, came out, and I think it was 2007 I came out. So by then, when we met, I was probably, you know, a progressive Christian leaning on not atheist, but what's the agnostically Christian, progressive Christian, who, you know, I was gay, I was proud, and fighting for inclusion in the church for queer people. And, you know, you had the Episcopalian church, there were certain churches, but like for like evangelicals, it was just, that was a new thing, you know, trying to mine that and navigate through that. And we were at that place, and it's so funny because do you remember that guy was invited?
I do.
Yeah. And there was a bunch of us all upset about him being there, and oh, we got to create the safe space. Well, I have evolved out of that. And I don't mean that in a high and mighty way. It's just how I've come. I am no longer a believer. I'm an atheist. And I find the left is just as shaming as the right. And this whole, I feel like there's a purity culture on the left, just like the right. And there's this whole, like, you know, trigger warnings and we got to make safe. There are no safe spaces. This is what I've learned in my own experiences, and that I have to learn through self-regulation and self-awareness that if something triggers me, I'm hearing someone talk about something and it triggers me, if I can't handle it, I just get myself up and I walk out quietly because I don't want to feel that, or you know what I mean? But I don't expect someone to be on a stage and say, well, we have a trigger. There's talks of violence, or there's talk of rape or all that. And then this whole cancel culture. If we cancel everyone, we're not going to like any music or any art or any books. I know there's some hideous people out there that do hideous things, and I don't deny that. But we all have a dark side. We all have a messy side. Life is messy. Life is not perfect. And I don't want to be coddled, and I don't want to coddle anybody. So that's kind of how I've evolved from that time where I'm like, no, I need this safe space. I'm queer and I don't need to have someone here that's going to attack me, because you know what? At the end of the day, that's not reality. I can't make a perfect safe place unless I want to hide in my house. And then there, it's still not safe because my cat might trip me and I might break my head. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes sense. I follow you.
I just, this whole cancel culture and these everything, and it's like people, I find it maddening that the left is similar to the right, that I came out of that conservative Christianity. I mean, I went to Pat Robertson's graduate school. I celebrated when he died. People were like, oh, that's horrible of you. And I'm like, no, he was a horrible person. and he did a lot of, inflicted a lot of horrible things. But I sometimes find this on the left that it's just the same thing. It's two sides. It's like Democrats and Republicans, two sides of the same coin. So
have you read, it's a book I read recently called Poverty by America.
No, never heard of it.
I'll have to send you a link. It's a super interesting book written by a guy in one of the top universities. I don't remember if it was Harvard or Princeton, and anyone, you know, that attended one or the other would probably be offended that I'm getting the two confused. But he's a well-decorated economist and talked a lot about how both parties are privy to keeping the poor and those who have with the things that they have, money and power and whatnot. So I definitely follow you on a lot of that stuff. I was, back when we met, much newer in that journey. I was starting to step out of the conservative church at that point in time.
Okay.
I knew there were a lot of things within the conservative church I didn't like, but I wasn't sure what the other options were. And so being there with the Outlaw Preachers at that time opened my eyes to a lot of things that I thought were possible. So I followed much the same journey you did, went through conversion into the kind of the leftist progressive type Christianity, and then went beyond or past that for myself. It, same thing, not in a high and mighty way, but in a way that just makes sense for me, that I'm also currently an atheist. It just makes the most sense to me. And it definitely models the way we raise our kids. My kids have never been to a church service for, you know, a Sunday morning. We've gone for special holiday things with friends and family, or we've gone for weddings and that sort of thing. But yeah, we don't really have that typical church experience for them, because I don't feel like they're missing out on not attending that.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm also Jewish, so it's like, like for our wedding, for example, we won't talk about God, but there's seven blessings that get read at Jewish weddings, and there's a secular version of the seven blessings. And
okay.
So we have exactly seven Jews coming to the wedding, and they're each going to read one of the blessings, you know, after our vows. And, you know, that's a way to celebrate my Jewish heritage without being, you know, religious about it. You know, you can find these ways to celebrate things, you know, and so I think, you know, not to poo-poo religion, I think it's done a lot of harm to people, but I understand there's some people that find comfort in it, and that's their business. That's the beauty about freedom of choice. It's when people start saying that I have to believe like they do, or they want to legislate and make laws based on their beliefs, that's when I have a problem. I don't care. Somebody can have the most important views towards me. But when you start telling me I have to believe like you, or you're trying to make laws that harm me, that's the problem I have. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm with you on that. I wish a lot of the people I knew from back in the day that have continued to stay conservative and that sort of thing wouldn't force their values on us.
Yeah. You know,
if they don't like a certain thing, then they don't have to take part in it. You know, like, I mean, I think drag shows are awesome. Some people don't. And but,
yeah,
they should still be allowed to happen, you know?
It's the priests, the men in dresses in the Catholic Church that are harming children, not drag queens.
Right.
We're gonna be honest, you know? God, if you don't want to go to a drag show, don't go to a drag show. If you don't want to get an abortion, don't get an abortion. You don't want to marry someone of the same sex, then don't marry someone of the same sex. But stay out of my life. Don't invalidate my love or my enjoyment. You know, as long as it's not harming anybody and it's consensual. I don't see children at drag shows. I participated in a drag show for my first time as a drag king. There were no children there. But, you know, it's like, it's nothing sexual, you know, so I don't know.
In a more lighthearted version too, right? Like if you want to believe the earth is flat, believe the earth is flat, but don't, yeah. Don't require us to teach it in schools, because there's nothing scientific about it.
But have your beliefs. Just don't, force them. They're like, well, you're forcing your belief about homosexuality on me. And I'm like, no, I'm not trying to take your rights away. You're trying to take my rights away. And that's not right, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, we live, this is the thing. People think we live in this Christian nation. Well, it's not. It's, there's separation of church and state, and it's supposed to be a pluralistic, secular country.
It's true, and it's why I applaud anytime they end up, you see these news stories about, you know, the after-school Bible clubs or whatever, mm-hmm. and then in comes the Church of Satan.
Yeah.
It says, okay, well, you've got your club, let's have my club. And I'm always amused at, like, how the community either says, okay, cool, and then it's like, all right, it's not a big deal, or they go, oh, no, we can't have that. Well, then let's go to court and make sure we don't have the other, you know.
Exactly.
We got to have a level playing field. Just yeah. like you said, as long as no one's getting hurt, then, like, who cares? I don't care.
I don't care. Yeah.
So where do you think you have seen the biggest growth and change in who you are as a person since we've met?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. I think as, like, starting during COVID, it's when I really, like, I dabbled in art, painting, but I really, like, started painting and expressing myself. So I think that was part of it. And therapy and learning about self-awareness. And then going through that, my friends asking me if they thought I might be on the autism spectrum and going through that process. And then dating sucks. Let me tell you, it's so, I don't know if I can cuss or not, but it's so fucking hard. I hate it. So I had given up and was thought, well, I'm going to grow old alone. And then I get diagnosed and I'm like, okay. And then literally the day I get diagnosed, I meet Hez, and I have grown so much that I've come into this relationship, able to communicate really well, make my needs known, express myself, and not feel like I'm going to be bashed over the head for my feelings or how I think about things, being heard, you know, and validated. Mm-hmm. And then I think my job I've been working in as a paraeducator, working with kids with learning disabilities and on the autism spectrum, and stretching and growing in those areas, you know, beyond what I thought I could do, has helped build my self-confidence. Cause I was always, could be very insecure and not confident, but I think I've really grown in that, you know? And part of, I think, a big start of that was coming to terms with my sexuality, coming out, feeling proud about that, and embracing it. So, and facing challenges, you know, when I went through breast cancer in 2018, that was really scary. And just persevering, you know, and rising up always out of the ash, you know, a phoenix rising. So, yeah. And leaving Christianity behind, that was huge, because that was like an anchor, a security blanket, you know? Oh my God. And when I realized I didn't believe in heaven or hell anymore, it was so easy to just let it go. You know, it felt controlling, and I don't feel controlled. So what about you?
Oh, the same question. See, I just asked you, and why am I so surprised by how deep a question that is? Well, probably a similar way, just in being able to not be hampered down by... So here, the idea, even when I was a believer, the idea of this all-loving God, all-controlling, in-power God that also would allow war and childhood cancer and... As a kid, you probably know this story. As a kid, I was 6 years old when I lost the sight in my left eye. Even as a child, I had this major, you know, trauma to deal with. And I never was able to reconcile how a loving God could allow me to go half blind in a traumatic way, like what happened. And speaking of Pat Robertson, do you remember, or were you familiar with Oral Roberts and the
Tulsa? Yeah, name.
So his
and I
kid,
think his son was gay.
My dad said as much.
I think he has a gay son.
He ran for a long time, years and years, ran a TV show down there. And I was maybe a year older, so I was like 7 maybe. I went, my dad worked, both my parents worked there at the City of Faith and all that. And we were able to go to a taping of his show, and I was this 7-year-old kid who earnestly believed in God and had this eye issue, you know. And I believed that when they got, at that time at least, when they got to the part in the show where the preacher would talk about hearing people's prayers and God would heal this person or that person or whatever, I have never, up until that point at least, believed in anything so strongly that when he was getting to that part of the show that God was going to heal my eye.
You thought,
and that's what I thought as a 7-year-old kid. I was completely convinced that that was going to happen. And then of course, once that part of the show came and left and nothing happened, he didn't even look at me, you know. And I even as a kid, I had like a crisis of faith. Like, how could God allow this when he's in control? Like, so he, growing up through the whole conservative thing and all that, like, it was always a struggle because of that. Other things as well, but that was one of the biggest things because it was one of the first things that happened to me. And then moving on and going even through the Bible and understanding, like, how it came to be the way it is now and the way people preach it and the translations and who wrote what and what we do know and don't know about it. It's a fucking mess. Like,
oh yeah.
the worst thing that ever happened to my faith was me going to Bible college and learning about where the faith came from and all that. And I was just like, it opened a door for me to ask questions and get better educated about it. And I was like, okay, it's not for me. It might be for somebody else, but it's not for me.
Do you know how I describe the Bible in the simplest terms? Breaking it. Do you know what it is? Remember the childhood game telephone?
Yes.
You'd whisper to someone's ear something, but then by the time it got to the other end, it was totally different. That's the Bible in a nutshell for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a large part of it was supposedly written by Paul. So it's not even like, if you believe in Christ, it's not really even Christ's story that we're reading and whatnot for years and years. It's Paul's story talking about keeping women quiet in church and all kinds of horrible misogynistic things like that are not okay.
Yeah.
So I, to answer your question, it would be me being able to leave the faith and feel good about it. Like I feel like I'm in a much better place.
It was freeing. It was like lifted off my shoulders. Like when I finally came out, when I came to, understand my sexuality and embrace it, and I came out, those were like the two biggest freeing days of my life, you know.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your upbringing. I don't know a whole lot about your upbringing.
Well, so I grew up, my dad was Jewish, my mom was Protestant Presbyterian, so I grew up going to Presbyterian church. My mom served mightily in the church, and my dad only went to church with us, like, I think it was Christmas and Easter. And my grandparents were Reformed Jews. Reformed Judaism, which is like the progressive form of Judaism.
Okay.
Started in the United States in Cincinnati. And my great-great-grandparents were part of starting it, helping to start it. But my grandparents only went to temple on the high holidays. And they were probably a little more concerned. They were like Reagan Jews. Whereas typically Jewish people tend to be Democrats, but they were Republican, Reagan Republicans. And then my mom's parents were Presbyterian. I was really close with them. And we went to church, and then the pastor left. We had an interim pastor in the Presbyterian church who was great and I loved. And then he left, and this woman came in, and her and my mom butted heads, and we left. It was like in, I don't even remember how old I was when we left the church. And then my Jewish grandparents put me in Catholic school starting in fifth grade. So I started, you know, going to mass and getting involved in that. Now, I never converted to Catholicism, but I went fifth grade all the way through college to Catholic schools. And I'm glad I got a good education. you know, and so there were ups and downs about it, but then I had a, I rejected God. My dad died when I was 3 weeks before my 17th birthday. He had cancer, and it was like a 5.5 month battle from diagnosis to death. Died in 1986. And then 3 months later, his parents and grandmother, so my grandparents, my great grandma, were killed in a fire in their house. So I lost 4 people in 3 months.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. And I rejected God, and then I didn't fully deal with the grief of that, so I carried that on into my adult life, and it came out in anger. And just a few years ago, I finally made peace and went through therapy over it and dealt with that. And I write a lot of poetry around grief. It's how I process, part of my process of grieving. And so yeah, it was and then I went to college, and then I got involved in a fundamentalist non-denominational tongue-speaking church, you know, and I had these attractions to women, but I clamped down and I prayed for God to take those feelings away, you know. And then I went to Pat Robertson's graduate school, and I got involved in reparative therapy to try to get the gay out of me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And pray the gay away. And I went to conferences to try, you know, ex-gay conferences, trying to not be gay. And I think I got free and healed, you know, and then the attractions would just come back. And, you know, I would do this white knuckling because God said that wasn't pleasing to him. And I would go to hell if I acted upon that. So I didn't want to go to hell. I wanted to fit in at church and be pleasing to God. So I did all these things to try to make myself not gay, but they don't work. They're traumatizing, you mm-hmm. know? So, and I walked around hating myself and dead inside like a zombie, you know, that's no way to live. They say Christianity brings life and joy, and well, it didn't in my life. So yeah, it brought trauma.
But you've clearly found a way to deal with that and move on.
Yeah. Lots of therapy, being honest with myself and not trying to people please and, you know, for people, and live life for me. You know, people think, oh, if I live life for myself, that's selfish. No, no, it's not. It's knowing that you have great self-worth, and you're worth doing, you know, what's right for you, and not pleasing other people, you know?
Right.
And living authentically, you know?
Right. Absolutely. And you can do that while still having empathy for others and being able to take care of others, but you can't be a good caretaker or friend or partner if you're not taking care of yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. Hi, Tallulah. Come here. Come here. Here, meet Joel. Here's Tallulah. Hi, Tallulah.
How long have you had Tallulah?
Oh, gosh. I got her 2 years in August. It was
okay.
2 years. Yeah, I went to Rock to get her.
What kind of dog is she?
She's a Tibetan Spaniel. And do you remember my dog Mushu?
I do.
That was my first Tibetan Spaniel. And then Tallulah was a second. And then we have Junebug, who was, we got her, I think it's going to be a year in November we got her.
Well, that's
she
great.
Just turned a year in June, so.
Nice. And they seem to be getting along well.
Yes, they are. And they play. And Junebug has a special relationship with one of our cats, Maurice. And they play together a lot, too, just as much as her and Tallulah. So we have a menagerie. And then we have 2 cats upstairs. Hez brought 2 cats, and we cannot seem to get the cats to get along. The one downstairs will not be nice to the 2 upstairs. So, you know
it sounds like kids.
Yes. Or the war between Ukraine and Russia.
Oh, well. I mean, there's that too. I think this will probably be the last question.
Okay.
Where do you want to see yourself 5 to 10 years from now?
That's interesting you ask that. I am getting ready. I've been experiencing burnout at work, and I'm getting ready when Christmas break hits and the semester ends. I'm retiring from my job.
Okay.
And Hez has a few more years to work, but we're gonna plan to just travel. Like, we want to go someplace and, like, you know, rent a place for like 3 months, and, like, you know, like we went to Portugal this summer for 2 weeks, but we want to go back for like 3 months, you know, and really explore, you know, not live full time overseas. And then, just, I'm hoping, I would want to explore my writing more, you know, and, I would like to try to publish some poetry. That's a goal of mine. And then I like, I've been a part of for 10 years and I haven't been able to do it the past few years because of work, but we have a program here, funded by Sacramento County. It's called Stop Stigma. It's to help destigmatize mental health, mental illness. Okay. And the Speakers Bureau I'm a part of. And I used to do a lot of speaking, but it's during the day and I haven't been able to go because of work. So right. I'll be able to do that. I'm actually speaking next week on National Coming Out Day, telling my story about coming out and, you know, being queer and how that affects your mental health and those kind of things. And I'm hoping to, I collect vinyl. I need to get my vinyl collection organized more, you know.
Nice.
Do you collect vinyl?
I started about 6 months ago.
Yeah. So there's that, you know, that Discogs app.
Yes.
Are you familiar with? Yeah.
Yep.
So like, I'm not finished. I got to, and it's a process to get that stuff because it's not just a matter of just scanning the barcode. Cause if it won't scan the barcode, then you got to find the little tiny number on there to enter it, you know, or,
right.
Oh my, it's time consuming. So like I'll sit and do a few at one time and then I have to stop, you know?
Sure.
So yeah, things like that, you know, little house projects, you know, we're buying this new house. So there's some things we want to do before we move in and, while she's working, I can go travel and visit friends. Maybe I'll come out and see you. And you're in Chicago, right?
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to come out there. I love Chicago. So
that, we just got voted the best city to visit for like the 7th year in a row by Condé Nast.
Oh, that's awesome. I ran the marathon there in 2000. So I love
cool.
Chicago. Yeah. You're my favorite skyline in the States. So
It's a beautiful city. Every time I fly back in, I'm like, man, I love living here.
Awesome. Do you live out in the suburbs?
Yeah, I'm out in the suburbs. You know, it's a nice suburb. When we were looking for houses, it was funny a couple years ago because what sold it was the school district, number one, because they're pretty well-rated schools. But number two was the library. My wife was like, we can't live somewhere that has a crappy library. And, you know, they've got – it's a wonderful library. We've got – all kinds of things you can check out. They've even have like little podcast studios you can like rent out.
Oh, very cool.
For an hour or two, or like some of the old family slides and stuff I've been bringing in, and they have like conversion machines and stuff. It's really awesome.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. Yeah, I have not been to Chicago as an out gay woman, so I would like to go see, you know, all the gay areas. I'd love to go to a Cubbies basketball or baseball game, I mean, and you know. Yep. So at Wrigley Field. So, yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Be happy to hang out with you.
Awesome. And drink beer and coffee.
Yes. Yeah. So tell me, do you have any breweries like close to you that you like going to, or do you kind of have to travel out a little bit more to hit a few that you like?
So by my house now, there's a tap room that I like to hang out at, and they get all the, you know, they have different beers from different breweries. My favorite brewery is Moonraker. And it's about, maybe 30 minutes from SAC.
Okay.
We're probably going to have their beer at our wedding.
Nice.
We have a lot of good breweries around here. Like, we were just at one this afternoon, Device. It's their second location. And, there's a lot of places, like, you can walk to. And, yeah, it's
that's really cool.
Yeah. I'll take you on a tour when you come visit.
That sounds good to me. I love brewcations, you know.
There you go. Yes. Yes.
Those are great. Those are great. Well, I'm going to thank you for hanging out. This has been a lot of fun.
You. Well, cool. It was great talking to you.
It's good talking to you. Have a wonderful weekend. And I thank you for letting me interrupt it for just a little
bit. Oh, it was my pleasure. And I'm glad we got to talk and catch up. Love you.
Right. Love you too. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.